Good morning, and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, along with Greg Bach and Calvin Butenhoff, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us wherever you are listening around Wisconsin at 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Greg Bach, it's Thursday, so that means Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be here for public cervix announcement.
It's the greatest day of the year.
If you have questions for Dr. Lyerly, a health-related question, doesn't just have to be OBGYN related. You can always text that in as well at 855-75-CIVIC or send an email to Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. And then coming up at 11:33, Acme Packing Company sports guru Paul Noonan will be joining us to talk all things sports balls. So stick around for that. Right now, though, we want to remind you to download the Civic Media app.
Why?
Because, first of all, it's free.
Ooh.
It's a free app. It's terrific. It gives you the opportunity to check out all the stations across the Civic Media radio network, as well as all of the shows. And this is how you have an opportunity to ride into spring with our statewide Text to Win contest. So download the Civic Media app. Go to the station that you are listening to, whether it's in Racine or Hayward or Eau Claire or Green Bay, and then text this word. This is the word this hour, lawn. L-A-W-N, lawn. Text the word lawn, and you will be in the running for an overnight getaway to the Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. And then we have four winners every day because we play the contest in the 7, 10, 1, and 3 o'clock hour. So one winner four times a day. Mm-hmm. Those winners and everyone else who is entered is in the running for one of our two grand prizes.
My phone's exploding right now. I love it. Keep it going, folks. Never stop until 11.
You have it until 11 o'clock to text the word lawn. You only need to do this once per hour. Mm-hmm. And then you can do it again with Todd Alba at 1 o'clock. And then again at 3 p.m. with Maggie Dawn. So again, the word this hour is lawn. L-A-W.
You're so used to call letters.
W-L-A-N. Yes, no, it's lawn. L-A-W-N. Text that in. And again, you can win an overnight stay at the Chula Vista Resort in the Dells and be in the running for one of our two grand prizes. Brand new bicycles or a outdoor patio love seat and a 3-in-1 blender.
Nice.
I think we're going to start a little unspoken competition with Todd Alba, who follows us from noon to 2. Because he's doing really well. They had so many texts the other day, they actually got knocked off the air. It was hilarious.
I want to break the internet.
Everybody's got to have a goal.
I know, and that's my goal. Break the internet. Well, not break it so we have to fix it, but you know what I mean. We're coming for you, Todd.
Text the word lawn, L-A-W-N, up until 11 o'clock this morning, and you will be in the running for those prizes. All right, we're going to start off with something good. We did something good.
Ooh.
Governor Evers on Wednesday signed into law a bipartisan package of bills which will increase the personal safety of judges. This is a really important thing.
Yeah, especially in context of just like in the past week.
Yeah.
Due to one dude.
Yeah. Well, under one of the bills, judges can request government agencies not publish their personal information about them or their families. Another measure makes it a crime to protest outside of a judge's home with the intent to interfere with, obstruct, or impede the judge's duties. And the third one, and this really made me stop and go, what? The third bill stops documents called judicial security profiles from being available through a public records request. So they do file these judicial security profiles with local law enforcement, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. It includes the layout of the judge's home, the medical history of the judge, which family members are living in the residence, and whether or not there's a security system. I can't believe that was ever available through public records.
I mean,
right?
I can see both sides. I understand why you absolutely would want to protect the identity, not the identity, but the home life, the personal life of a judge. But some would say they are a public servant because if you go to any internet source, you can find the home address, phone number of your alderman, of your county board supervisor, of the mayor. Like, this is all public information. So I understand why it would be available for public request.
The layout of your home?
I mean, that should not be, of course.
That, seems way over the top to me.
No. And I can, I understand why the government would want that for safety, for whatever, for
absolutely, because you want if law enforcement is going to be called to this judge's home, they want to know what they're going to be dealing with when they get there, right? How many people live there? What's the layout of the home? Is there a security system? Those kinds of things. But I can't see how that is any of our business as just a member of the general public. It's not like they're hiding.
I need to know how many half bathrooms you have.
Right. And what kind of soap do you use? So this, I feel, is a good thing. And this is a bipartisan measure. So we like to complain. I know that's shocking.
We like to vent with a certain je ne sais quoi, I'd like to say. There it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Delightful complaining.
Complaining with some spice.
With some style. No, we complain about nothing ever getting done. And so that's why I do like to take the time to address when we actually work together, because it can be done to do things that we agree upon.
Yeah.
And this is a good thing.
Yes.
And again, we've been talking about the need to protect our judges, especially in the last 5 to 7 years. And just as an example, there's a judge in Colorado. The Secretary of State is getting just inundated with violent online threats after she expressed support for the ultimately unsuccessful effort to keep Trump off the ballot for the 2024 election, which, by the way, was brought by Republicans in Colorado, not Democrats.
Jane, once again, you show your foolishness. It was the corrupt FBI along with Antifa. I haven't been able to find a single Antifa yet. It was Hunter Biden's laptop was doing the whole thing itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just open your eyes. The Republicans, you're crazy.
Jenna Griswold was brought in as a co-defendant when a group of residents sued to keep Trump off the ballot. Since then, threats targeting her have gone up by more than 600%.
Well, the example I'm thinking about right now is Trump had a gag order placed on him, and he went on Truth Social and started saying things about the judge there and about his children.
And one of his daughters.
I do not understand. Earl was talking about this earlier. I do not understand. Make a special jail for him. I understand it can be a hazard for Secret Service. They can't police a small jail lockup. So make a jail for him and put him in it, because he's violated these gag orders so many times and he walks away like it's nothing. So now we have to create new legislation to protect our judges because of this stuff.
And these are some really violent, horrifying threats that these judges get. One email to this Colorado official: "We are coming for you, B. If you have kids, I hope they get murdered by illegal aliens. I can't wait to find you and follow you to your house and expose your address. Take my advice and wear Kevlar, lots of Kevlar." Threats from Trump supporters, according to Rolling Stone, have skyrocketed across the country, many directed at elections officials and inspired by Donald Trump and his allies that the election was stolen, which, again, it has been proven in over 60 court cases with some judges that were appointed by Donald Trump.
Yes.
That the election was free and fair and legitimate. And yet they continue to push this lie. And other things I'm reading now, with the change at the RNC, where Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara, is now one of the co-heads there, they're having loyalty questions. And if you don't agree that the 2020 election was stolen, then you're not going to get a job there.
That doesn't surprise me at all. In fact, if anything, I feel like the RNC is going to be the prototype or the blueprint for the next level, which is going to be
the administration.
Government.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to throw one more name on there. I think it's always important to mention him. It's not only did the court cases fail, not only did the Trump-appointed judges rule not in his favor, but our very own Popcorn King, Robin Voss, supporter, endorser, and voter for Trump this year, being recalled, trying to be recalled by his fervent supporters, has said on record, it was safe, it was fair, Biden won, Trump lost.
Move on.
Let's do this. How about you take that? What would happen if all of those individuals took that energy and moved it towards a reelection campaign that was just, I don't want to say full of information because it's like they never do that, but you know, they're everywhere. They're just shooting in every direction and they're shooting every single kind of conspiracy theory out into the air. And it's to the point where you just have to go, oh, I can't do this. I don't have time. I've got bills to pay.
855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Tom from LA on the line. Good morning, Tom. Thanks for joining us. We got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, so we must never forget that. Second, give Donald Trump his own special jail. It'll be the biggest jail ever. It'll be the best jail ever. It'll be the, you know, most personalized. You probably will try to sell tickets to have people come see him.
Great ideas, Tom.
Let's get his butt in jail. Second, I just want people to realize out there, if you listen to what Taylor Swift said in her comment in Miss Americana, she actually spoke more policy than we hear from any Republican politician out there at all. In a 2-minute thing, she said she's in favor of a woman's right to choose. She's not in favor of people, you know, beating up on her friends who she talks about. I mean, that was more policy than I've heard at all from Republicans. And Greg, you're right. I mean, they have nothing. They have nothing to run on because they can't even talk about policy. And I just hope all those people that are fair-minded Republicans out there, you know what, please, there's more of us than there are of them.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it. Bill on the line. Please stay. Hold on, Bill. We will continue this when we return. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast Civic Media Radio Network. Morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Thank you so very, very much for joining us. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. If you would ever like to join the conversation, you can call and or text and leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon is ruining. We are talking about a bipartisan measure of bipartisan bills, three of them. See, we can actually get things done and agree. Which are intended to bolster the personal safety of judges because they have really been under attack for the last few years. It's gotten very, very serious. So I'm delighted to see that we got something done. One of the bills, judges can request the government not publish personal information about them or their families. Another makes it a crime to protest outside a judge's home, trying to interfere with, obstruct, or impede the duties. And then the third stops documents called judicial security profiles from being made available via public records request, which includes the layout of the home and security system information. And I can't believe that was ever available to the public.
I got a question for you. If we are going to pass a bill that does not allow people to protest outside of judges' homes, doesn't it just make sense that you shouldn't be able to protest outside of any lawmaker or decider essentially, because either one for all or all for or none, because it seems like, and this is not me arguing against the idea, but aldermen, state senators, assembly members, they pass laws, governors sign laws in the books,
right?
Like, do we want this to be a proactive movement or do we want to reactive? How much does this limit speech?
That's a good point.
You know, should they be able to protest with a proper permit? And, you know, I don't know. It brings up a lot of questions for me.
Absolutely. Bill from Oconomowoc, thank you so much for your patience, Bill, and thank you for joining us. What do you want to say?
You brought up something the other day that was really interesting to me, but you only touched on it. You didn't amplify it. And I think you need to. All these threatening calls that people are receiving, you said, and I quote, that some of them came as far away as Nigeria and different points of origin. I believe that only 1% or a small percent are really in Trump supporters doing that. I think that's foreign governments understanding only too well what a way to create chaos. And so they just amplify it and make it worse. Now, the good news is we live in an era of technology with even, I don't care who says what about tracing them. I used to work for AT&T. It is all possible to find points of origin on all those calls.
Right.
It is far from impossible. And if you, as you highlighted the other day, if they're coming from foreign countries, well, those are foreign countries that want to destroy America by doing that. They're not stupid. But on the other hand, if the FBI and CIA said, you know, we've had enough, now we know where you are and we will be knocking on your door, that will eliminate a lot of it. Because all they have to do is be exposed. Even if they're another country, doesn't mean we're going to charge them. We're just pointing out to the American citizens, this is not an internal problem. This is an external problem. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bill. That's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah.
I do think that certainly there are other governments that are trying to interfere with our election. They have their own agendas.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's nothing to say also that bad actors within this country aren't the ones paying these troll farms to do this.
Well, and that's sort of, I mean, forgive me for going off on a little bit of a, it's not a tangent, but here's the thing is like, when talk about things like TikTok and China and getting our information, we have plenty of people in this country who run businesses that take our information and do terrible things with it. Why are we trying to shut them down as well? Like when we talk about bad actors within the state, we need to go after them. We can't just make so, you know, it can't just be about like, oh, we want to keep kids from hula hooping on their phones. That's right. I'm an old man. I said hula hooping. But I mean, that's like, I think about that more than I care to admit, the idea that this notion of trying to shut down TikTok and its Chinese investors is more important than, say, Facebook, who is an American company who has been proven to show they were messing with our elections.
Yes. And selling our data.
Exactly.
Which is when I left Facebook in 2019.
Oh, you were so smart.
I was so infuriated when I found out they were selling our data to Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
That day it was like, yeah, Zucker, I'm done. See ya. Bye-bye. We do have some texts coming in.
Yes, we do.
Tom, if a politician doesn't respond to you when you call their office, yes, you should be able to peacefully protest outside their home. Also, a question about emailing us. You don't have to spell my last name. No one can spell my last name. I had a general manager who mispronounced my last name for like 7 years. So send emails to Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. If you have comments or questions or a suggestion or a topic you want us to cover or something happening in your community, no matter where you are in Wisconsin.
I will say this too, as far as Twitter goes, someone was asking about Twitter handles. Give Matt Nair on air a shot online. You can find out how to spell it. If you follow us on the social medias,
it's there. It's on the banner.
Shoot us a DM if you don't want to send us an email, but do it through the Matt Nair on air branded social media handles, please.
We would appreciate that very much. Reminder also, this hour's word for our text to win Ride into Spring, a statewide contest. The word you need to text via the Civic Media app before 11 o'clock is lawn, L-A-W-N. Text the word lawn, and then you will be in the running for an overnight stay at the Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. Also be in the running for one of two grand prizes. We've got some bicycles, and then there's an outdoor patio love seat and a 3-in-1 blender, fancy schmancy blender. Who doesn't want that?
I want it now.
You can't have it.
But I want it.
Text
I'm America. American man, give me more I want.
Text the word lawn, L-A-W-N. We're having an unannounced unofficial contest with Todd Alba to see who can get more people texting in, because he's been rocking it.
Hey, Todd, you listening? we're coming for the title, yeah, baby.
We're coming for you. All right, we have news on the way in just a little bit, and then when we return, three headlines and a lie. Greg Bach.
Yeah.
Would you like to work with a partner?
Why not?
Yeah?
Yeah.
If you would like to partner up with Greg to determine out of the four headlines which one is fake, give us a call right now. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Play along with Greg. Three headlines and a lie. Right after the news.
This is going to be sparkling or a train wreck.
Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Vanish in the haze, but every now and then I feel so insecure. I know that I just need your life, I've never done before.
First they said we couldn't dance, then said we couldn't drink, and unless a man allowed it, they said we couldn't think.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. So very happy to have you along with us. Jay Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the show if you want to call or send in a text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest join us. We've had a lot of questions about this. And as a matter of fact, Deborah, we just had a caller ask when we were going to talk about these two referendum that are going to be on next Tuesday's ballot. So delighted to welcome Deborah Cronmiller. She is the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining us, Deborah.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Well, let's talk about these two referendum, and we have talked about them a little bit before with other guests. It's my contention that these are intentionally written as murky as humanly possible to confuse people so they don't know what it actually means. So I'm going to just read this first referendum, and then we'll pick that apart a little bit if that's okay. Number one, the use of private funds in election administration. Shall Section 7(1) of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that private donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expended, or used in connection with the conduct of any primary, election, or referendum? So this, I'm assuming, is referring to some outside money that came in to help administer the elections in 2020 when we were in the midst of the COVID pandemic.
Correct. I think it is a response to that. I think it's also kind of circled into some of the what we know to be misinformation about how this money was used in 2020. You know, we were in a new and very different place in 2020 with the pandemic.
Yep.
And we had the consolidation of many polling places. We had, a lot of different needs that clerks had never had before. You know, they had to have a lot of protective equipment for that election. They had to have sanitizer, plexiglass shields, that sort of thing. We know when they, in some areas where they actually reduced the number of polling places, they needed more equipment in those polling places so that they could mitigate the number or the length of the lines so the voting experience wouldn't be a horrible one. Yet in Milwaukee, we saw lines that went around the block, you know, and it was just horrible. The monies that came from the Center for Civic and Tech Life were they're grants that are made to municipalities, and they have terms. And the terms are that you can only use their grant dollars for nonpartisan purposes. So things like the administration of the election, they could buy equipment, they could pay poll workers, they could get all that PPE that those polling places needed. What they could not do with the money by contract was use it for any partisan purpose. So there was no way they could have, a municipality could have tried to turn out voters of a certain party. So there was no partisanship in these dollars. And I think that some of the misinformation that we're hearing is that because larger grants went to Milwaukee and Madison, communities that have self-selected to be a little bit more liberal, that clearly this was some way to turn out the Democratic vote. When in fact, 200 municipalities in the state of Wisconsin accepted grant dollars, some in the most conservative areas of our state. And our clerks took those dollars because they needed them to administer their election. It was not about political motivation. And so I think we need to separate the truth from the falsehoods and really make sure that people understand that one, elections cost money. Two, there's not enough state and federal money to go around to cover the cost of these elections. Outside money has been a part of election administration for years, even long before 2020. And without this money or without a guaranteed source of other monies, taxpayers are going to cover this cost. And I think none of us want our tax bills to go up.
Or we're just going to have much longer waits and much longer wait times, right? And the whole voting process is going to become more of a pain in the neck. And I think, as you said, Deborah, there is this misinformation that this money only went to Milwaukee and Dane counties. And I don't know, as you said, there are very specific requirements as to how this money can be used. So it's not like they're giving these dollars to the election commission and then they're printing up flyers on behalf of one candidate or another. That's not what the money goes for. It's, as you said, it was for PPE. People forget. Remember where we were 3 years ago at this time. We were standing 6 feet apart. We couldn't find toilet paper in the stores. As you said, Deborah, election clerks were dealing with a situation they had never dealt with before. And I had no idea that outside money has always been involved to some extent in running our elections, because there's so much attention on Mark Zuckerberg. It's all Mark Zuckerberg's fault. No, but that's not true.
Municipalities accept outside money to do lots of things, to support their libraries, to do their forestry work, to, you know, and elections dollars, when they're available, municipalities can apply for those as well. Kind of creating a wholesale, no, you can't accept any money for this one purpose of government. It seems, you know, targeted and wrong. It just seems wrong. We do not need this to be in our Constitution. The legislature had an opportunity to put said language into law, and that probably is exactly the right place where it should be, is in statute, if they want it to be there. The governor vetoed that bill. And, you know, there's a League of Women Voters, you know, an organization that's, you know, been advocating for good government, transparent government for 104 years now. This looks to us like a trying to usurp the executive branch's authority and take it onto the legislature. You know, the legislature had its chance to do this through regular lawmaking processes. It failed. They did not have the votes to override the governor's veto. And now they're trying something else. And that something else is putting this in the form of a constitutional amendment in front of the voters, which if you listen to some people who are advocating a yes vote on this particular amendment, they're saying that's where it should be. The voters should decide. Well, that's not good government. We have processes for putting these sort of policies into law. those processes didn't work because our lawmakers couldn't agree. And that's that doesn't mean you change the process. That means you don't get the law.
Well, and it's essentially, well, we didn't get what we wanted through the regular channels, so we're going to invent a new way to get what we want anyway, and put this as a referendum that is poorly worded to confuse people.
It seems like an emergency break glass almost situation.
If you're just joining us, Deborah Cronmiller is our guest. She's the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, and we're talking about the two referendums that will be appearing on your ballot statewide next Tuesday on April 2nd when we head to the polls for the primary. It almost seems, Deborah, that some people want to make voting much more difficult.
Yeah, we think that this could potentially have that ramification if enacted, which is why we're asking for a no vote. You know, if voters do have to wait longer, if there's less, you know, up-to-date equipment or fewer, you know, the second question of all of this, you know, fewer people involved in the mix to help support our valuable clerks, you know, what does that do to the voters? What does that do to their voting experience? And when voting experience starts becoming less and less a positive one, do folks stay home? And that's the sort of you know, advocacy that the League has been doing for many, many years. We want everyone to have access to the ballot. It needs to be as simple as possible. It needs to be, you know, the least number of barriers to ensuring that your vote is going to count. And this just looks like we're standing up some additional hoops to jump through and making it harder for our clerks. You know, we all know through all the polling evidence, people like their clerks. They trust their clerks. Our clerks are our neighbors. Our poll workers are our friends. Yep. We know that the elections in Wisconsin have strong integrity. And by putting in some of these not necessary constraints on our elections, you do we break down some of that?
We're talking to Deborah Cronmiller, who is the executive director from the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. We've talked about this many times, Deborah, about we should be embarrassed as a country and as a state on how low our voter turnout is. That must make you crazy when you see like 66%. I guess it's better than 46%, but the goal is to get people out. And this election is going to be more important than any in our history.
Yeah.
Seriously, we cannot encourage enough people to get out and vote.
Correct. Every election is important, especially spring elections. Spring elections have on the ballot our judicial races, our municipal races, the school board races, your local referendum question. And these are the things that impact your life every single day.
Directly.
Yes.
Who sits on your city council? Who sits on your county boards? These are the folks who are deciding everything that happens in your locality. And, you know, every voter should feel compelled to come out and say, this is the county board member I want. This is the city council member I want. This is the mayor candidate that shares my values. I want to make sure that person is running my city. These are the really rubber meets the roads elections. And it's always been a confusion to me and all the League members why we don't come out for them. You know, this is the big time. You know, presidential elections happen every 4 years. A lot of stuff gets done at the federal level, as we all know. But what really impacts our lives every single day is what happens at the local level.
Absolutely.
That's such an excellent point, Deborah. It really is. These are even more important than the presidential election, just in terms of what this means for your day-to-day life and what it means directly in your community as opposed to across the entire country. So, yes. Get out and vote on Tuesday. It's really, really important. Yeah. Do you have time to say for a second segment? Because I don't know that we'll be able to cover this whole thing. I'll set up the question before we go to break. This is the second referendum question that will be on next Tuesday's ballot. Election officials, shall Section 7-2 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums? Now, when I read this, it makes it sound like I can pull Bill in from off the street and have him give advice. That's not accurate.
No. We're all kind of confused what this actually is. In the statutes that currently exist, election officials are defined very clearly. What we're fearful of is that by codifying that, you know, statutory language in the Constitution, we create opportunities for confusion. And that confusion might end up being litigated in courtrooms across Wisconsin as to whether or not, you know, the League of Women Voters, who published a voter's guide that printed some information about what candidates are on your ballot and how to find a sample ballot, we're not defined in the statutes. Was that now a prohibited activity?
So they could.
We just don't know answers to questions like that.
So there could be litigation then, yeah, if someone wants to come after the League of Women Voters. Yeah, this seems like a bad idea. We're going to continue this conversation. If you have a question for Deborah Kronmiller, please feel free to call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
They said we couldn't vote.
Get out of the street. Ladies, this is illegal. Move, get out.
We were defiant, I'll admit, but we knew we couldn't quit, 'cause the suffrage amendment must be passed. We protested, we cried out, finally it came about, ratified. Dash our hopes with every word they spoke. They tried to revoke a woman's right to vote.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Cal B, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, call or text at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. So glad to have our guest with us. She is the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Deborah Kronmiller is here to kind of break down the two referendum that are going to be appearing on next Tuesday's ballot when you head to the polls on April 2nd. The second question, again, Deborah, we'll recap a little bit. Election officials, they will make a special article in the Constitution that only election officials designated by law can perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums. And as we were saying before the break, this kind of sets it up for even organizations like yours to be in the crosshairs of someone if they determine that you are not an election official.
That's correct. And because it's so vaguely written, it's difficult to, you know, ascertain whether or not all of the different supportive players to our elections and our election officials would be allowed if this were enacted. And so the, you know, what we know is the League's involved with poll worker recruitment, as are other organizations. The League's involved with getting people to the polls, offering rides through our collaboration with Lyft. And Vote Riders does this same work in municipalities around the nation. These are not actions or activities that are defined in statutes and would not be codified in the Constitution were this to pass. So now the question becomes, if it's not in there, does that make it not allowable? And that we're concerned about that. And we're concerned because our clerks have always accepted support. You know, if the machine that is in the polling place on election day, you know, fails to accept the ballot, you know, something's wrong with it, they call in a technician from the company. That person's not defined as an official election worker.
Sure.
Are they allowed to come into the polling place then? Are they allowed to fix that machine? There's just too many questions here. And I think with all those outstanding questions, we have no choice but to vote no.
And once again, it just feels like there is a certain group of people who want to make it as difficult and uncomfortable and as murky as humanly possible. And that doesn't seem... that doesn't seem very pro-democracy, at least to me.
We agree. And the but the reality is, I think what we also agree on is, you know, clerks are so important to everyone in a community. You know, they help really make sure that our elections are safe, secure, accountable. You know, they certify results. They send their results to the counties to be certified. They send it to WEC to be certified. Everything has a paper trail. We know it all works. It's like we're fixing a problem we don't have. And I always am concerned about why we do that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I said to Jane earlier was, when the group of people who are doing this get their way, they make it harder for the people even who vote for them. They make it harder for everybody. This doesn't just affect one group of people.
You're absolutely right.
This affects the entire electorate, and there are going to be plenty of people who are going to say, I was going to vote for so-and-so, but I'm not going in today because
I don't want to wait 3 hours.
I got to wait 3 hours. I got to do that. Like, no, and they're going to, I mean, it's not advantageous. And as you said earlier, if the law couldn't make it happen, don't put it into the Constitution, because this could also backfire on the group who put it forth one day as well. I mean, this, it's, as usual, not very well thought out.
And amending our Constitution is a big deal.
Yes.
You know, we've had a Constitution in place for over 150 years. We've amended it 148 times. And most of those amendments, or half of them basically, were to undo a prior amendment because it wasn't well thought out. It was perhaps a policy or a social issue that never had a place in the Constitution to begin with. And that's what we think about these two questions and this constitutional amendment. It does not belong in our Constitution. It's a policy. It's about how to administer our elections. This can be done at the election administration level through the Wisconsin Election Commission. It can be done through legislation. Certainly does not need to be done through constitutional amendment.
Well, and yet again, I go back to yet another example of one group not being able to get something done going through the correct channels. So they come up with a different way to go around it, mm-hmm. to see if they can get their way that way. And with the yep. language that's used in these referendum, it's intentionally murky. It's confusing. The issue, at least from me, from my perspective, I'm going to vote no on both of them.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's what we're advocating. And you, the electorate should be aware that this is actually a more complicated situation than it appears on its face. Not that it's not complicated enough, but the questions that are on our ballot and what should happen in the Constitution, the language change in the Constitution is actually different than the language change that we're seeing on our ballot. And for all of these reasons, it's not transparent. It doesn't seem, or it doesn't feel good. And, you know, I think we've discussed the motivations for it certainly are to make voting more accessible.
No.
I think the motivations are to suppress certain individuals from voting, mm-hmm. or worse, create some sort of false narrative around the integrity of our elections, which we know are of very high integrity.
If you would like to find out more, Deborah, if someone is listening and that they'd like to learn more about the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, where can they get in touch with you?
Sure. You can always find more information about us on our website, which is lwvwi.org. We actually have a toolkit on why to vote no. You'll find that in our section on our navigation bar, toolkits and resources. And the toolkit is a vote no toolkit.
We will get that in our show notes once we put the podcast up afterwards. Deborah Cronmiller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, thank you so very much for your time. This has been really, really informative.
Thank you so much.
Stay close. We have news coming up next. Thank you to Greg and Calvin. Without you, nothing works. Thank you most of all to everyone for calling and texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.